to share. So send a smile and show you care.
Somewhere out there, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Dr. Bruce Lipton received his Ph.D. at the University of Virginia. That was in 1971, and he served as an associate professor at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine, where his research on cloned human stem cells provided a radically new understanding of the mechanisms controlling life. Bruce resigned his tenured position to pursue independent research integrating quantum physics with cell biology. He returned to academia as a research scientist at Stanford University School of Medicine to test his theories from 1987 to 1992. Bruce's revolutionary studies integrating conventional medicine science, complementary medicine, and spiritual healing have made him an internationally sought-after lecturer. His new book, The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter and Miracles, now available. We'll talk about that throughout the night as well. Bruce, welcome to Coast. How are you?
Oh, wonderful, and thank you for this great opportunity.
Well, my pleasure. You know, right before you got on, I had an opportunity to talk about a person in Brazil. They call him John of God, who is doing some miraculous forms of healing. Gosh, I wish I could get you up to Brazil, Bruce, to take a look at what he's doing. I guess some of this has to do with faith and positive energy, doesn't it?
It all has to do with that. And it's a great turnaround from the conventional point of view that we've been ingrained with, that we are more or less victims of our genes, you know, that everything that in our lives are controlled or the characters we attribute to genes. That's a prevailing perception, which is scientifically incorrect. And a new understanding is manifesting now at the very front end of science that I'm so happy and excited about it, because it really reveals that we're about to undergo a massive change in our culture from a new piece of science.
Indeed we are. Now, how did you begin to change your thought? Because you did change, and that happened over what kind of a period of time?
Well, it took me about 2 or 3 years to figure it all out and start working on it, because I was kind of new to this. I wasn't a spiritual person, never was, and never into the weird stuff, astrology and all that, which now I actually have to turn around and say, okay, I can understand the science of all that, where I didn't before. But I came from this conventional allopathic world where I was teaching medical students the dogma of biology about how genes control life and all that. And as you mentioned, my research was on cloned stem cells. And the wonderful part about this is I've been working on stem cells since 1967. So while it's a kind of a recent buzz topic, I was working almost 40 years ago. And the interesting stuff was, as I was doing my research and observing how these cells were carrying out their lives in my tissue culture, I realized that what I was teaching in medical school didn't really conform to the way that life was controlled. And that, of course, led to some understanding that, first of all, and we can talk about and expand on this, is that DNA, it's a mistake. Our whole understanding about DNA, almost like it's a self-actualizing molecule, that like someday a cancer gene is going to turn on and give you cancer or something like that. That understanding is now very different. In fact, so different that it takes us from being victims of our heredity. The new science will really offer people an understanding how our beliefs and our perceptions control the genes. And then when I started to see this, how it worked myself, I first started to get, oh my goodness, I mean, my whole life changed, because as I hope to expand on that, that whatever controls our physiological bodies is actually an identity that's not even in our physiological bodies. It plays through it, via mechanisms on the cell surface. When I started to realize that, I started to realize that, my goodness, my thoughts are like a government to a community of about 50 trillion cells. And why this is important is that you and I look in the mirror, we see ourselves, and you look and you see George right there. I look, I see Bruce, and all our listeners, are they can see themselves as these individuals. And that's like, well, that's an interesting take, but the reality is that the living things that make us up are the cells. That we, and when we say that word we, actually represent the collective consciousness, so to speak, of 50 trillion cells. It's the cells that are the live things in our body. So in a sense, if I would reduce you down to the size of the cell so you could fit into that environment, you would see this metropolis of 50 trillion citizens. And
making up the whole, I guess.
They're making up the whole. And what I used to teach in medical school is a very interesting point. Every cell, essentially, is just like you and myself in this regard. That with all the miraculous nature of our human characters and qualities, you know, there's nothing new in function that's not already present in every single cell. So every cell has a digestive system and a respiratory system, excretory, a musculoskeletal system, an endocrine system, a reproductive system, nervous system, and even an immune system built into every cell. And so when you realize that, that these are actually the sentient little beings, that's why when I was culturing them, I'd take them out of the cells out of patients, put them in a tissue culture. And interestingly enough, and when I was working with muscular dystrophy, many times the cells grew better in the tissue culture than they did in the person. And it was a very interesting beginning insight to realize that the character of these cells is related to the environment that it finds itself in. And that we and our thoughts, and this is the interesting part of going back again, when we say that word we and we have thoughts, we're actually communicating to 50 trillion citizens, just like a CNN broadcast.
Sure.
And every cell is observing everything. When we get afraid of things in the world, the cells are afraid because they're like watching TV and watching the ruination of our civilization, and they're darn afraid. They're on the inside because if civilization doesn't make it, they don't make it.
I mean, are they in there quivering away?
Absolutely, and there's an important understanding that the research led to, and it says very clearly, is important point is that individual cells are either really in a state of growth or they're in a state of protection. It's like an either or situation. And why this is relevant is if we keep ourselves in a state of protection, it means by its very nature that you're not allowing them to grow. And what that really means is this, is that it's sort of like if we look at cells as citizens in a community. And in the old days when we were afraid like the Russians were going to bomb us, we had this idea of building all these bomb shelters. So look at a cellular community or a human community. So the human community is out there doing their jobs, the factories are working, schools are going, all that kind of stuff like that. And that when an air raid siren goes off, the people leave their jobs, their activities, and they go down into a bomb shelter. Well, there's an important point is that while they were working, the community was in a state of growth. But the moment they go into the bomb shelter, by its nature, to protect themselves, they must let go of the growth. So nothing is happening when everybody's in the bomb shelter. Well, if it's just an air raid test, and 10 minutes later everybody comes out of the bomb shelter, it's not a big deal.
They come back to work and get things going again,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's just like a long coffee break. But here's the problem, and this is the problem that faces almost all of our citizens today, is this. What happens if you have an air raid signal and everybody goes in the bomb shelter, but you never get an all clear? And that's where all of a sudden you realize, well, you can only stay healthy and survive in that bomb shelter for as long as you have materials put aside to do that. But there's a point where if you're not actually continuing the growth process, you run out of your nutrients and your survival materials, and you die in the bomb shelter in a state of protection. Well, why this is important? The community of cells are actually a fractal image of the community of people. And when we give broadcasts to ourselves from our thoughts, like scary things or things aren't going to work and like, oh my goodness, trouble is ahead, these are essentially like little air raid warning sirens going off in the system. And when that happens, the cells tend to go into protection, and it's like going into that bomb shelter. And what happens in our world, which is very different today than in the past, is that when we get stressed, it's like becoming chronic stress. In the old days, a saber-toothed tiger would stress you, of course, as you were running away trying to save your life. But the reality is, there's a point. If you made it, you outran that tiger or you got away from it, then you collect yourself and you go back on your job again. Mm-hmm. But in our world, it's like we're being chased by that tiger 24/7, 365. And that's where I said, that's where the problems come, because if we are broadcasting that fear into our bodies, our community, our cells are downloading this, then by their nature, they will compromise growth, which means they will compromise our health.
Well, if I'm hearing you right, it sounds like you're saying that individual cells, these 50-plus million cells,
trillion
cells,
yes,
have brains.
They absolutely have brains. And the best part about it is, the exciting part, why I love this work so much, is you can go pick up any textbook anywhere right now and look up the concept of what is the brain of the cell, and they'll say the nucleus is the brain of the cell, and the reason why they say that is because the nucleus holds all the DNA, and we've essentially created this like church for DNA where we all bow down and pray to the DNA gods. And the interesting thing is that we've made it like the brain of the cell. And I love this part, because simple logic. The years, 50 years or more, says, you know, the Watson Crick story, and our you know, getting this belief ingrained in us that we're controlled by the genes. Here's a piece of logic, and it's a part of an experiment that was over 100 years ago. And the experiment is this, and this is where the logic comes in. If you have an organism and it has a brain, and you take the brain out of that organism and throw it away, the necessary consequence of that action is the organism will die. Without a brain, it's going to die. So that's our given premise. The brain keeps it alive and organizes its behavior. Now we go to the cell, and I say, okay, let's take the nucleus, which has all this DNA, rip it out of the cell, because that's the brain of the cell. And so we do this process, which in the lab is called enucleation, and the most amazing thing happens is the behavior of the cell doesn't change. It goes on with its life just as before. Some cells can go two or more months with no genes in them, and they're not just sitting there. They're doing everything they were doing before. Their lives are an integrated series of behaviors of eating and digesting and excreting and moving around and communicating with other cells and avoiding toxins in the field. In other words, you remove the genes, you throw it out of the cell, the cell still has a life, it's integrated, it has purpose, direction, and then you might say, well, what was the consequence of taking the nucleus out? And I love this part. The consequence is this, is that the nucleus has the patterns, like the blueprints, to make the parts for the cell. And if a cell breaks its parts and can't replace them because the genes are gone,
right,
that cell will die. But did it die because the genes were, you know, like the genes were controlling it, and now they're not there and they're not controlling it? The answer is no. What happens is the nucleus is not the brain of the cell. It's the gonad. It's reproduction. And the only time the cell experiences a problem when you remove the nucleus is when it needs to reproduce its parts or reproduce itself. I love to bring this up in lectures. I mean, is that science is a very male-dominated profession, and since we are always told we think with our gonads, and that's how the nucleus ended up to become the brain of the cell. But in reality, it's just reproduction. That leaves the question, of course, where's the brain of the cell?
Where is it? That's right.
Yeah, and that was the piece of data that, like, 1985, I'd worked on this for about 20 years. And it was about like 1:59 in the morning, and I started to reconstruct my understanding of the cell membrane, the skin of the cell, because my research had obviously said the brain can't be the genes and nucleus, because they in the enucleated cells are not even there. So we have to look for something else. And my research led me to the cell membrane, the skin of the cell. And the interesting thing was I sat there, and this is like after 20 years of playing with the concepts, I rewrote the definition of the cell membrane in a way that I hadn't done it before. And all of a sudden, it was just like at Las Vegas when you pull the crank on the one-armed bandit. All the cherries lined up in a row at this one instant, and my life was changed between 1:59 in the morning and 2 a.m. in the morning. I went from a non-spiritual person to a fully spiritually understanding person.
Within moments.
Within that minute. Because I saw how the mechanism worked, and if I'll give the definition, and some of your listeners, a lot of them, I presume, might even understand what this definition is. But I sat there and was writing a biochemical definition of a cell membrane, and here's what I wrote. The cell membrane is a liquid crystal semiconductor with gates and channels. Well, in 1985, I wrote that, and I looked at it for like 158 now, and I wrote this down, and I look at it and think, my God, I've read that definition somewhere, but I had no idea where, and it wasn't in biology. And all of a sudden I looked up, and there was my first Macintosh computer and a book from Radio Shack that I bought, a simpleton book, Understanding Your Microprocessor. And there I look on page 3 in the introduction, and it said, a chip is a crystal semiconductor with gates and channels. And for the, like a millisecond or two, I mean, there was a storm of activity in my head. It was like, well, it's so coincidental that it was like, it's not a coincidence.
No,
that in fact,
never is.
The cell membrane, and this has now been demonstrated by technology, the cell membrane is an organic information processing chip. And it picks up information from the environment because on the surface of the cell is essentially a keyboard made out of receptor proteins. Receptors are the things like your eyes and your ears and your nose and your taste buds. These are all things in our skin, if you think about it, that are monitoring the environment and sending in information. Well, the cell has molecular equivalents, nanotechnology equivalents. They have eyes and ears and nose and stuff like that in these proteins. And there's like, maybe thousands of different kinds of protein receptors tuned to different things that the cell is aware of on the outer surface. And so as the cell moves through the environment, the signals or information or content of the environment that it's in is like pressing the keys on the keyboard on the surface. And that then sends in a reflex action into the cell, which can control the genes so that the cell makes an appropriate response to stay alive in the environment.
Preferably, it does that.
It does that, and that's where, when you and I could get into the discussion about, yeah, but that's what the design was, but how come we have so much autoimmune disease today, diseases that we're killing ourselves with?
And why can't they fight back?
And the issue is like when you understand the nature of the programming, rather than trying to go into the biology with drugs and chemicals and surgery and radiation, it's like, no, you don't go in to destroy the machine. You actually have to understand how to reprogram the machine.
All right, stay with us on that, Bruce, because what a lot of mainstream medicine has been doing over the years is exactly that, killing off parts of that machine, hoping that it will replace itself. And apparently, as you say, that's not the way to do it. We'll be back in a moment. And you and I, by the way, also had some very uncanny things happen to us as kids in science class. I'm going to share my episodes with you as well. Very similar with yours, Bruce. Back in a moment.
Miss part of the show? Listen online with Streamlink. Log on to coasttocoastam.com. from the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
What a guest he is tonight, Dr. Bruce Lipton. We'll be back with him in just a moment. Well, we have a finite date now on the end of the Art Bell's interview on Mel's Hole, the free CD offer, the end of Feb. That's it. And then we are resting it. If you want to subscribe to the After Dark newsletter, now's the time to do it, because you'll get the free CD, and you'll also get the getting those Sounds of Hell on the CD as well. Call 1-888-727-5505, 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online right at the bottom of the coasttocoastam.com website, safe and secure at coasttocoastam.com. Bruce, I couldn't help but see the uncanny similarities between your career as a youngster and mine. When I was in school, 5th, 6th, 7th grade, my science teachers would get microscopes, much like you did when you were a kid. And the very first thing I saw with a microscope that just sent me on the path of just wanting to get into science in a broadcasting sense was a little paramecium, just like you did.
How did that get you into broadcasting?
Well, I wanted to investigate these as a reporter and broadcaster. You wanted to do it as a scientist. And so I went in this direction to do these kinds of stories. I'm having the greatest time talking to you because this is what I wanted to do, but on this end. And you're doing what you wanted to do.
Well, you know, it's fun because both of us saw these things as, I guess, as little sentient beings in this world that were there, and they moved with such purposeness, you know. They weren't like pinballs bouncing around. And so that you could feel that there was some process of consciousness going on in these beings.
I always thought of them as my little friends.
Yes. Well, that's what they became to me and my best teachers in the end.
Let's talk about why this works the way it does. You know, you brought up something very interesting a few moments ago when you said, you know, you look in a mirror and deep inside you have these 50 trillion things, cells in us. They're all alive, doing what they do and functioning. But the big question remains, who are we? And when you do look in that mirror, Bruce, you see your two eyes and your nose and your mouth and your ears, and you just try to wonder, you know, what am I doing here? What's the purpose? What do I do? How do I function? Well, I wake up in the morning. I do what I do. I come into work. But what am I? And, you know, it's something I yet can't answer. Have you been able to get that?
Well, I certainly got, for my own sense of being, an answer that has changed my life on this planet. And it comes to this when I was talking about the fact that every cell has this like computer chip membrane, and the DNA is actually the hard disk. That's where the programs are. And I said that what activates the cells are signals from the environment. And this is the beautiful part, when you come down and say, well, look, you know, George, you have cells in your body and they have your identity to them. I have cells in my body with my identity, and every listener out there has cells which have their own identity. And you say, what do you mean have their own identity? And the answer is this. If I take your cells and put them into another body, they will be looked at by the other body's cells as, you know, who are these cells?
Yeah.
They don't belong to us.
The invader.
And they will, you know, remove them from the system. And so the question is, okay, what is it that makes your cells you and my cells me? And this is where, if you track it down, this is the part, I mean, it just blew me away.
Should I sit down for this?
Yeah, because this is a connection that just, it puts like pieces together for everything. And that's this. On the surface of your cells are a set of protein antennas that are unique to you and not to anybody else. Now, on my cells, I have a completely different set, or at least, it doesn't have to be completely different. There could be overlaps. When people try to, when they need a kidney or a transplant, you can't just take anybody's cells. You actually have to, what they say, tissue type them and try to compare the similarities between the surface markers on these cells.
And get as close as you can.
And yeah, because the closer you can, the less of the aggression of the immune system to reject.
Right, right.
So, okay, now, so what are we looking at to identify people with? Well, we're looking at a set of antennas. Well, where are they located? Well, they're on the outer surface. Are the antennas unique to each individual? Well, the clusters are unique. And then the question is this. Well, do the antennas give the identity? And this is the part where it's like, no. As their names imply, they're antennas. They're receivers of identity. And so the fact is, there's a signal going through your cells from the environment, picked up by a set of exclusive antennas that are different than the signals going through mine, although we may share signals.
Now, wait a minute.
Yes?
You just said the signals are coming from the environment.
Yes.
Are you saying, like, the universe?
Yes. And that, so, and here's the part that's what I said. You know that moment where I said in 1985, at 1:59, I was, like, not spiritual, and two, I was spiritual because at that moment I realized that we are controlled by the environment. Each one of us is controlled as a unique individual by a separate set of signals. And what makes that important at that moment is if you kill the cells, you've never killed the source of the signal. The signal was outside. It never was on the inside.
Is that how, like, my cell phone, for example,
yes,
is got a different number than your cell phone?
Right.
We're all broadcasting our cells and our communications up to that satellite, up to the receiver.
Back and forth.
But and it's all going to the same place, but when it comes down to us, we're all separately receiving it.
It's essentially, almost the most perfect illustration is you take some white light, you shoot it through a prism, it breaks up into the rainbow spectrum, and then I go down and divide each of the color spectrum into the smallest frequency of a unique color, and I assign that to each individual. And what it really says at some point is while we each consider ourselves as a unique entity as much as an individual color, collectively, we're the white light. And the lesson that we actually have to biologically understand on this planet is that rather than conforming to Darwinian theory, which is this destructive philosophy that is actually leading to our own demise, we have to recognize that we are all part of the same living organism called humanity, that to eliminate another person is the same as going in your own body and ripping out cells and throwing them away. And that, of course, the dialogue isn't right among the community, and that's why we express as a community a dis-ease. But, you know, it's interesting because it's the same image that occurs within individuals, that if the dialogue isn't right in our own personal biological communities, then the community will fracture itself just like people do. And as a result, we express an internal dis-ease.
So here's the question. If we're receivers,
yes,
who's sending to us?
Well, you know, and as I said, I came from a non-spiritual place, and for me to say this, you know, to all three of my listeners out there, the reality is, I think that we come from a universal source, that we come from a Godhead, that we are all a piece of this God in the sense of each color frequency in that spectrum is a piece of the white light in total, that we come down to this earth, that we have a unique opportunity. You said, you know, well, what am I doing on this place? Well, here's an interesting concept if we think about it. I'm trying to say that we have this existence outside of the body, but we also have an existence in the body. So why have one or the other? What's the difference? And the answer, it really comes down to this. Without a body, if you're just a spirit, what does chocolate taste like? Or what does a sunset look like? Or what does being in love feel like? The reason why these make sense to us in our physical body is because our cells translate the environment and give us sensation that we can experience. And so, it's like come full circle and say, well, what are we doing here? My God, if there's a heaven, a place of creation, I think we're here. And the problem is, since heaven is a place of creation, you can create anything you want. And I think the biggest problem is we have leaders who are creating things that are not in our generalized picture of what we think heaven might be. and yet we can turn this all around, and this will be, I think this is the evolution that we're about to go through, and this is a very important step in human civilization, because we are evolving to a higher level of awareness, and this new science, the one I told you about, that how cells control life, is part of that pivotal change. It's interesting because you say, well, you mean just a scientific belief is going to change civilization? And the answer is very simple. It says, well, look, go back when we had Newtonian physics, and then all of a sudden one day we had quantum physics. As soon as we had quantum physics, our entire world changed. I mean, we don't use crank phones, we use cell phones.
That's right.
You know, and instead of stethoscopes, we have CAT scans. And the fact was, how did that change? Because science saw how the universe was made up of something different than it thought it was. Well, this is going to happen again. And it actually links the former quantum revolution now to a biological revolution as well, because we're going from a point where we thought that the genes were controlling our lives to the reality that we control our genes.
Now, are there some scientists, though, who still believe in the conventional fashion?
Oh, my God, most of them do.
Still.
Most of, you know, because if you're not doing research at this edge, this is out in the research end, because if you're doing teaching, you have to teach according to the textbooks. And the textbooks are right up to this minute telling you that the genes control life, even though I can, as I told you before, you can remove the genes and life isn't affected. So this is a belief system that we're propagating, and it's totally incorrect in that regard, but the difference is psychologically, socially, culturally, is when we own fully that the life that we're experiencing is something that we are creating. And we own that not as like, oh, isn't that a neat idea, but as a fundamental way of this is how life works, then we have the freedom to let go of the enslavement to the power structure, to the belief that we're victims, our biology is victims to every little drug out there and every chemical and toxin, to realize, my God, you can walk on this planet as much as like walking across hot coals. If your head's right, you can walk across the hot coals. If your head's not right, then don't try that.
You used to do research on cloned human stem cells.
Yes.
Now, over and above the arguments of pro and con based on emotional reasons, in your opinion, did you think that now was a waste of time and that you should have been concentrating primarily on what you're doing now and this is this new biology?
Well, no, because those stem cell babies, they taught me the new science that I modeled my life after. Once I understood how they worked, I modeled my life after them. And I can't, it's hard for me, I burst with excitement about my way of life before understanding this was, you know, I was successful in my profession, but life was life. Today, as I said, I'm so excited. I really think this place is heaven because I realize now I've made these creative changes, and they're not accidents, that they're actually purposeful kinds of control. And as a result, it's like understanding how cells live. And we look at cells in an academic sense. You say, well, what intelligence can cells have? And the reality is, I'll tell you the intelligence they have. They made us, number one. And number two, they have technologies that we can't even think about. They have technologies that allow 50 trillion cells to live under your skin in a perfect state of harmony and balance. And you can be healthy and ecstatic, and meaning that, God, we're trying to figure out how a few billion people can live together. And here are the rules of life. The cells have been doing it for billions of years. Show how you can have perfect harmony and health in a population. And we look at them as not being intelligent, and I think, well, that's our hubris. And the reality is the secrets that we need to know are already built into the biology. And in the biblical sense, it says, like, go within to get the answers. Yeah, because going within is who we are made out of. We're made out of those cells. And it's, to me, it's just so wonderful to see them work and do this stuff, especially stem cells. You know, right now this whole issue of stem cells and research and all that, to me, I think it's like a joke in some sense, because it's sort of as if you look at it and you stand back and say, like, God gave you stem cells, but didn't really give you the way to get them to work, and so we have to wait for the pharmaceutical industry to figure that out. And the reality is, you got stem cells because you have them in your system that you can use them. The question is, rather than trying to find the chemicals to engage them, we should really ask the natural question is, if we already have them, then what might be the problem in our exercising use of them?
Are you saying, though, that all drugs are not worthwhile?
Not all drugs. I would really put down there's basically very few possibly that are okay, but the biggest history in the drug research is that most of it's all placebo effect anyway. And that, yes, indeed, there are some people who actually need some drugs because, I'll tell you why, they got here with birth defects. And they got here like, it's sort of like cars come off the assembly line at the factory, and every now and then a car comes off. It's not going to work just right, and that's going to need more care and maintenance than the other ones are. But the point is 95% or more of us as a population got here with a perfectly adequate set of genes to have a prosperous, healthy, happy existence and experience on this planet.
If we took care of it.
If we understood how it worked rather than buying the stories that we were told how it worked.
So that also includes, though, what you eat, how you exercise. That's all important to
that. All of this stuff is, you know, it's like if we collectively group it, you say, oh, this New Age phenomenon stuff. And it's sort of like, well, yeah, basically to understand that if you step aside from the concept that this is just a physical machine, I mean, we teach it in the academic sense that the body is like this vehicle. But the unfortunate part of our analogy is we never really talk about the driver. And that's the big problem of medicine. We only talk about the vehicle's well or the vehicle's defective, and we never consider, so what's the influence of the driver who's handling that vehicle, which is that spiritual stuff that was coming through those antennas that make you and I different because we're drivers, or, as most people are, unfortunately, in the world we live in, they switched on to autopilot.
Let's take out the creator, the
yes.
higher power for a moment.
Yes.
I don't know how we can in this question, but let's try to.
Yes.
When this all started, and there were tiny little cells on this planet, and
3 billion years worth of just single cells.
And they're all over the place, but I mean, that's what they are. Single cells, little organisms. I mean, if you were to look at them with a microscope, you'd go, that's going to be me one day. You wouldn't believe it. What happened, Bruce, get this to start forming who we are today? Because, again, taking out the creator for a moment,
yes,
it's very difficult to explain how this came about.
Well, the creator gets hard because that gives us an image of somebody up there with like a magic wand doing kinds of stuff like that. And yet there is, in a sense, if you understand the new biology, it actually unifies the concept of both, and this is interesting, it unifies the concept of both creationism and evolution, that they both occurred at the same time in this regard. That
Can this have happened?
Yes,
without the creator?
Without the creator, without the energy that
right.
invisible moving forces?
Right.
No.
That's what I thought.
No. The analogy that's a very pretty picture is, imagine I take iron filings, I put them in like a salt shaker, and I sprinkle iron filings on a piece of paper.
Okay.
Every time you do that, you just get a random pile of iron filings.
Right.
But if I put a magnet underneath that paper, and then sprinkle the iron filings, every time I do it, I get this pattern. And if I make a complex pattern of magnets, I get a complex pattern of iron filings. I throw away the iron filings, sprinkle it again, and guess what? It forms the same thing again. So what's the difference is, iron filings are like cells, but there's a field with information, and that's like the magnet. It's an energy field.
And without that field, it's
then
nothing.
Then you just got a pile of random cells, and it doesn't do anything.
And that's the way it would have continued.
Absolutely. And so what's important is conventional biology is scientifically passé because conventional biology does not yet recognize the influence of quantum mechanics and does not express the role of energy as information in biological systems. And as a result of their completely mechanistic Newtonian perception, they look at the body as this machine, but they forget about the fields and the energy, which are actually the driver of this machine.
Do you think these single-cell organisms, 3.5 billion years ago, knew what their mission was, and that was to create us?
I don't think they had that level of awareness, but at some point their mission was as same as us, even, you know, whether it's a single cell or 50 trillion cells, the mission was always to survive. And it's interesting, we call that a biological imperative. Nobody knows where that's programmed, but every organism from the most primitive single cell upwards, if you threaten its existence, it will do every defensive move to stay alive. And that's like So why would it do that? We don't know, but if you build that in, then it says every organism on this planet got here with intention to survive.
When we come back, Bruce, at the top of the hour, I want to find out from you why then these organisms formed insects, fish, trees, then us, chipmunks. Let's find out why there was a difference. I'll be back in a moment.
The official website of Coast to Coast AM is www.coasttocoastam.com. Log on now.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. With all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. Yeah, I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. Yet all the night seem to whisper and hush, yet all the soft moonlight seems to shine in your blush. Can I just have one more moon dance with you, my love? Can I just make some more romance with you, my love?
From somewhere out there, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
What a neat conversation with our guest, Dr. Bruce Lipton, tonight. His book, The Biology of Belief. His website is brucelipton.com. It's linked up right now with his name on coasttocoastam.com. Let me spell it for you. B-R-U-C-E-L-I-P-T-O-N. That's brucelipton.com. The name of the book we're talking about, The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness. He's also got a fascinating DVD out there as well. I'll give you his toll-free number a little bit later on if you want. And also, he's got a special deal just for you, just for Coast to Coast listeners. I'll have Dr. Bruce explain that a little bit as well. We'll be back, though, as we talk with him about this new biology in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Dr. Bruce Lipton. Bruce, in the beginning, I like that, in the beginning, sounds kind of biblical, doesn't it? These single-cell organisms, were they all the same or were they different? I mean, like a snowflake, for example.
They were more like your image of a snowflake, George, that that cells created all kinds of variations to fit into every environmental niche that they could so that they adjusted their physiology and their physical structure to accommodate new environments as they expanded their range. And that actually was interesting because it was the first 3 billion years of life that all we had were single-celled organisms, that paramecium, the amoeba, algae, yeast, bacteria. And about 700 million years ago, cells started to come together to form community. And the fundamental reason is simply this, is that every cell sort of maxed out its awareness processing mechanism, its brain. It sort of got, cells reach about a standard size that if they got bigger than that, they would rupture, and if the cell ruptures and then the membrane splits, the cell is dead. So cells reach a maximum size, but to get more intelligence, you couldn't add more to the cell, but the way it manifested itself is that the cells would come together in a community. and then they would share awareness in that community. Now, you say, well, where did all these shapes come from? Well, go back to that image that we talked about with iron filings and a magnet.
Sure.
And imagine that I have all these different shaped organisms as magnets. And they're out there, and you start to sprinkle the iron filings in. And as you add more and more iron filings, you fill out the structure of a pattern that exists. Well, this is this part about the creation evolution stuff, is that the fields exist before the matter could fill the field. So in a sense, the fields were already giving us a form, but if you only had just like a few sprinkles of iron filings, you couldn't fill up the entire field of, let's say, a human. So you have to make a smaller organism first. So smaller organisms were able to materialize first, and over time, through the ability of cells to form larger, more differentiated colonies, they were able to create the larger shapes of organisms. So that the organisms didn't appear all at one time. They appeared over an evolutionary sequence, but they didn't appear randomly, in that fields were already determining the nature of the organism.
At what point, though, did this happen in terms of not time, but who or what gave the command to start doing what they did?
Well, it's interesting because there's an organism today, a slime mold. These are amoebas, single-celled amoebas. And they live their entire life in this solitary amoeba fashion. But if they run out of food in their environment, that causes the cells that are beginning to feel the starvation problem to release a chemical, which is, this is like the first appearance of, as we've seen it, of the cells that are beginning to starve come together in a community. And in that community, they exchange apparently DNA in this process and provide for spores or germs for another generation further down the road, especially if nutrients come back into the field again. So what's interesting is that the cells give us an example that they live their solitary lives, but under the stress pressures of not enough nutrients, they will come together and reorganize and send like a few like astronauts in a sense of future, you know, some of them will be sent into the future in the form of spores, to wait for the environment to again support them, and then they start to make another large population of single cells. So somewhere along the line, it was the ability of cells to communicate with each other across distances to come together to support the survival of the whole.
Do you believe that these single cell organisms from 3.5 billion years ago looked identical to the same ones now?
Very much the same.
So they really haven't changed much then.
No, and this is the beautiful part about it. It's like when you look at your human cells, they'll look the same as a cat cell, which will look the same as a mouse cell, which will look the same as a chicken cell. And as I go down, there's a point where you say, well, you know, all these cells look the same. And the answer is, yeah, those are the iron filings. They're pretty much uniform kinds of, you know, in a sense, cells carrying out the same functions with the same things. But it's how you put them together in the community. It's the shape. We recognize an organism by the shape that the community takes and give it a name, like a lion.
So you're saying, though, the cells that make up George Norrie,
yeah,
the cells that made up my dearly departed Labrador Retriever, the cells that make up a chicken, they're all the same, but they've got different what to it?
They have different sets of antennas and receptors and how they respond to the environment, so that they download pattern and program from this environment. So it's not like we thought that all the pattern was built in. The cells are responding to extracellular environmental signals, and that gives the shape of the community, which then we recognize as an organism. So a human, we see it as an organism, but in truth, it's a community that takes a shape with, this is how 50 trillion cells divide and you know, distribute the workload, creating who we are.
Fascinating, Bruce. Absolutely spectacular how this has happened. Now, here's the big question. Look into the future for a moment.
Yes.
What will we look like? What commands will occur 50 years from now, 100 years from now?
Well, we do modify our physiology to accommodate its usage, but will we dramatically change? I doubt this very much. because the evolution I think that we're going to see is not the evolution of individuals. It's the evolution of the community of individuals. So think about it this way. I said like 3 billion years there were just these single-celled organisms all roaming around taking advantage of the environment best they could. Then all of a sudden they started to come together in a community, and the community was the sharing of awareness between all the cells, which gave them greater opportunities for survival. Now just look at us as humans, that we have over the years started out as a whole bunch of individual cells all over the place, but have grouped ourselves into these communities. The thing that we lack is the evolution is not going to change us. What it's going to do is change the nature of how we interact as a community. So in the end, humanity will actually be like the living organism, and we are the cells. You and I and all of the listeners here are cells in a larger organization. And when that completes that level, the earth is then in essentially a complete harmony. That's when the earth represents a cell, which in the fractal imagery that we're talking about here will then link up with other cells to create an intergalactic organism, so to speak.
Of all this that you've studied so far, and now I want to get into the creation portion of this in a moment with you, Bruce, but what fascinates you the most of what you believe you've uncovered?
Well, the thing that fascinates me the most is that we're more than who we think we are, that we were told this throughout history, that we could do the miracles and marvelous things, but we couldn't do them because we didn't believe in it, and that to take us from the world that we see now, which looks like an individual on a deathbed almost, we can have a spontaneous remission in a planetary sense. And in that process, by using our awareness and our consciousness, which we are just like idling and not really going anywhere at this moment, with that input by people who know who they are rather than being told they're victims, we have an opportunity to bring life back to this place and turn it back into a garden from what almost looks like a deathbed itself. And I just want to talk to just the audience a second about this, is that while all this stuff is coming off and it's very glib and off the top, this is very much scientific information, and it's presented on the website, and it's available for downloading, you know, the articles and references that I put on there. And I just want to say that, and the same thing about the book, but the book is really designed for the lay audience reader. It took me 20 years to take the science out of it, turn it into everyday language, because that's who needs to understand it, and also add a few laughs with it as well.
Well, you know what's fascinating to me? I've got two camps here that listen to the show. There's a group that loves paranormal, the UFOs, Bigfoot, things that we do like that. There's another group that equally loves real science, and I'm going to put you in the real science category.
Yeah, but I'm
except,
the paranormal guy.
Well, hold on. That's right. I'm going to bring you into the middle as well.
Yeah.
Because you skew both because of what we're going to be talking about tonight.
Absolutely.
And that's what I like.
Yeah. For me, it's a delight because I'm going into realms that when I was in my conventional scientific shoes, I never would have imagined that I'd actually be talking about in realistic understanding.
Okay, now, the signal that is coming to these cells,
yes,
that kicks it into high gear, that tells them, hey, this is what we need you to do, this is who you are, and off they go to work, sometimes in tandem, sometimes not. What do you think's out there?
Out there? You mean outside of our skin?
Oh, way out there.
Way out there. I think that we're living in a pulsing energy field involving chaos and fractal geometry, very important part about it, and this work really leads to a scientific understanding of why nature is modeled in a fractal. And so that I'm not just saying nature is fractal because it looks like it. I'm saying it's fractal because of the design of how you expand awareness, that skin, how you make skin a two-dimensional thing into three-dimensional space, requires that you use fractal geometry. And then why am I bringing that up is because, as most of the listeners might be aware, I mean, in fractals, there's self-similar images that repeat themselves at higher or lower levels of organization. And what's beautiful about this new biology is it reveals that, as I said at the beginning, every cell is like a human. It's got every ability that we have, a cell already expresses. So the image of a cell is actually reproduced in the image of a human. But then the image of a human is a cell in a larger living organism called humanity. And why this is neat is that if you really need to get to some fundamental questions, you could look at any particular level and using the fractal self-similarity, get some information about who's out there and what's going on in that sense. And I really get excited about it because I so firmly see this outside other reality existing. Interesting, in the recent times, a large number of patients have received large grafts like heart-lung combinations. And there's a number of books, and I have references in my book and talk about a little bit of it, is that when they receive these grafts of organs, they don't just receive the organ. They also begin to acquire the character of the person who donated the organ. In one sense, one of the examples was really interesting. A man who received a heart from a woman who was murdered was able to identify the murderer after he took the heart
into
his body.
See, I love stuff like that.
And then you might say, amazing. But this is the beautiful part because it's like, okay, now let's put the science and this paranormal together and say, so where the heck, how did that information come down there? Where'd they get that? And some people have, you know, would say, oh, it's cellular memory. Well, look, I'm a cellular biologist, and I tell you this, cells like a liver cell, have, you know, remembering it's a liver cell is a big job, you know. The idea that it can remember chicken McNuggets and beer is not really a scenario that makes sense. But if we look at those antennas that are on the cells of the graft, they're still connected to that source. And so as long as the cells are downloading an identity, they are connected to that field of that identity. So it's interesting, these experiments, or they're not experiments, they're actually people whose lives were saved by these transplants, become experiments in that they also now acquire character because now their population of cells has a very large contribution from another identity.
Last year, Bruce, my daughter had a disc removed from her neck. And I got to tell you, it was a basket case for a couple days while that was going on, that whole process.
I would imagine so.
They go through the neck, and they pull out the disc, and then they put it in there, and they screw it in there. And then 2 months later, she's driving, and some guy rear-ends her car and gave us some more tense moments, and she's fine now. But she started to have, maybe about 2 weeks after the operation, a bizarre series of dreams that she said, Dad, it wasn't me. She says, you know, I know my dreams. And, you know, and I know that when I'm in my dreams, I know who I am. And, you know, I feel comfortable with them. These were different. She said, I felt like I was somebody else. And we started talking about this disc that she received because it was a cadaver disc.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, sure enough, we both think that maybe she was experiencing something from that donor.
Well, this is the kind of thing that I would have said years ago, come on now, George. But now I'm sitting there saying, yeah, George, I could see this as very much how information is downloaded back into the system, which if you really want to, you know, put this into like fictional interest, then you could also go, you know, the beautiful job they did of mummification of these pharaohs. Imagine if these antennas were still effective of downloading signals and somebody could, you know, translate them. If you preserve them just right, then they'll always be downloading those signals.
By the way, Karen out of Worcester, Massachusetts, says she's already looked at your website, and she says it is geared to lay people very understandable, explaining in greater detail exactly what you're talking about.
That's why I wanted to make sure that people understood that, as I said, we're glossing over it. There's some beautiful science under this, and it's the science of, it brings in the spiritual, it brings in those invisible forces, it brings in non-locality into the system, it opens up everything that was paranormal, metaphysical. Now, actually, when you add quantum mechanics to this biology, which has been left out, then all of a sudden it becomes natural science at that point.
Do you believe in life, intelligent life out there in the universe?
Absolutely.
All right. Now,
absolutely.
Now, I'm glad you said that because now I can ask you this. Did those organisms and single cells that began on those planets, which ultimately led to its intelligent life, did it get the same kind of signals we've been getting here, our cells have been getting here, And then I assume that we're talking about physical beings that may then look pretty similar to us.
The whole range of spectrum may work in this, because the organism's physical structure is really a manifestation of a complement to the environment that it finds itself in. So that we're beginning to find, for example, we always thought parts of our Earth were barren, and yet we find there are organisms that have adapted themselves to the most extreme environments that we could ever imagine. I mean, like at vents of boiling water at the bottom of the ocean, there are living worms and things down there, but their physical structure adapts to that environment. The things that live in ice and have been locked in ice and still growing for years, they accommodate their physical environment. So what would be the presence or expression of a life form from another planet would be an interesting wild card, but would be, in a sense, complementary to the planet's environmental background, so the organism would have to conform to it. Would they look like humans? In some environments, probably yes, and in other environments, no.
Or maybe pretty close. Maybe they may have bigger heads, like it's been reported. Maybe their eyes may be a different shape than ours.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's just that the physical bodies, there are patterns, and it's just a beautiful system of replicating fractal patterns throughout the system, which make things very nicely predictable in a world that we thought was random.
When we come back at the half here, Bruce, I want to ask you something about the other dimensions that may exist in this universe, maybe even parallel universes, to get your take on how that may or may not affect what you're talking about now with this new biology, which really unites conventional medicine, complementary medicine, and spiritual healing. There is definitely something out there in what I've always called the wireless internet. Let me give you that toll-free phone number, by the way, interested in this fascinating book called The Biology of Belief, where I am tussling with two engineers who want this after the show, and they're not going to get it. Call 800-245-9463, 800-245-9463, brucelipton.com. As a matter of fact, he's offering as a special gift just to you when you buy his book, The Biology of Belief, which is available at his website or Amazon.com. You can call this toll-free number that I just gave you, but he'll also give you that ability, as he mentioned, to download the free chapter that Bruce wrote on healing ourselves, healing our planet. And there's no indication on the site that it's there, so you can listen to the show to know about this gift. We'll be back in a moment.
Get it in writing with the After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe by calling 1-888-727-5505. Premier Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Sure has. As a matter of fact, our guest is Dr. Bruce Lipton at the top of the hour. We'll open up the phone lines. We'll give you an opportunity to talk with Bruce as well, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Dr. Bruce Lipton. Bruce, tell me a little bit about this special note again for listeners.
Well, I have a chapter that just came out in a wonderful compilation called Healing Our Planet, Healing Ourselves. And it includes chapters like from His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Deepak Chopra, a whole series of people. Probably a number of people have been on your show. And my chapter is available from that book as a download, PDF download for those that are interested in checking out the website and looking at the biology of belief book.
Excellent. Now, back to the thing at hand, of
yes.
course. Parallel universes, do you believe that they exist?
Well, I have to, you know, because it says things when you get into physics, and you could talk about physics, and we talk about it at the one level and say, oh, yeah, this quantum stuff occurs only at this one level. And yet, as we started to look around, and people like physicists Amit Goswami at University of Oregon have revealed that people act just like atomic particles and using the same mechanism. So it built into the understanding at that level is indeed there are other alternative places that must exist, because their experiments show interference from things that are not visible in our realm.
How about angels? Do you believe that?
Well, I would certainly, you know, if I go back to my belief system that that who we are, our identities are actually fields of energy that play through our system, then those fields of energy are always there, and we're able to tap into them. And when we get out of our own head and get into our intuitive sense, I believe then we're really able to have a dialogue with the awareness that constitutes our human awareness field.
You know, for a long time, my belief was that angels were merely, objects that were created. Now I'm beginning to believe that they were part of the universe first and foremost before the physical realm occurred. But the big question is...
Well, that's what we talked about. I would agree with you as well. As I said, I think those forms exist before there was a physical realm.
But do you still think that they're created with cells?
Well, I think the cells conform to these fields so that they become complements, physical complements, downloading information and turning that into pattern.
I think you're right, too. But somehow along the line, they are all interconnected.
Absolutely. And this is part of the problem, I think, that how we've made a big mess on our planet because of our old beliefs, especially the religious beliefs, that put us on the planet like we were an add-on extension, that like on a certain day, all of a sudden people were dropped on the planet separate from everything else. And if you really see the biology part of it, everything is in a community. If we remove the bacteria from this planet, we would die by tomorrow. I mean, we need them. We need the structure. And that's why, as a biologist, I very much get concerned about how we're destroying the environment. Because if you really look at the biology, and I say we're made in an image of this environmental information, then who we really are is not the physical bodies that we end up in right now, but we are actually that environmental information. And then if you realize it and you say, well, wait, if we came from the environment and you destroy the environment, then in the end, we actually are probably destroying that information of who we really are.
When they finally mapped the human genome,
yes,
and they said, this is this incredible breakthrough, we're going to be able to solve disease and stuff, I don't hear that coming from you.
No, not at all. Actually, they had to say that because with all the billions of dollars, they didn't want to look very sheepish and foolish when they found out, because the issue is, as most people don't even know this, is that in order for the concept of genetic determinism, the belief that medicine teaches that genes control who we are, in order for that to be true, we have to have an excess of 140, 150, 200,000 genes to make a complex structure like a human. Well, the human results come out, and it turns out that we have about 25,000 genes. Well, one of the genetic organisms that's most used in laboratory research is this miniature worm called Caenorhabditis elegans. It's a miniature worm with 1,300 cells approximately, And that organism has 24,000 genes. We have 25,000 genes. Some point it's like, okay, I don't think you can understand or gauge the complexity of a human from its genes, which is now an established fact. But since all of science said humans are humans because of their genetic complexity, when the results revealed that we had like this small number of genes, nobody's ever actually spoken up about it and said anything. It's been very quiet, because the reality is it's like a cosmic joke. It says, your belief system that you're controlled by genes cannot be true. There are just not enough genes to do that.
I have found that somehow when you tap into this field of consciousness,
yes,
you feel better, you tend to have more energy, and you are able to do some incredible things that you couldn't do when you weren't in the groove, as I call it.
I agree with you. That's when you start to, you're not like resisting the environment, you become in harmony with it. And it's, and resistance is met by heat and breakdown, and you know the structure gets jarred through resistance. And yet, as you just said, when you start to flow with the environment and go in harmony with the environment, nature actually just energizes you from the back. You're not like fighting the stream. You're flowing with the stream.
It's like a resonance. You just somehow have that kind of vibration.
Yes. And those that don't, you can see it in their personal lives, that when they are out of that harmony and out of that balance, so are their cells, so is their physiology, and almost all their characters of life are in some way dampened, or you know, in some way trumped by this not being in harmony.
I was reading a story today, Bruce, about elephants, and an elephant in the herd had died. And they visited this dead elephant, you know, they touched it with its trunks. They had the baby elephants come by, and, you know, the elephant apparently, its bones were put in the brush and kept there out in the wild. Apparently, when these elephants went on their trek and then came back about a year later, they visited the bones like people would visit people in cemeteries, right? Their
yes.
loved departed ones. And almost the witnesses would say they acted like they were in mourning. And, you know, and they all went up to the bones and then they all left again. Now, that tells me that there's something to this where we have taken advantage, I think, of what is on this planet.
That's an understatement, George.
Yeah.
And the other part of that is there is this general belief, you can talk to scientists everywhere, that humans are intelligent, and everything less than humans lack intelligence to the degree of their size or something like that. I don't know. But the point about it is we stand out and say that, like, we're this intelligent thing, and everything else is just an accident happening. And it's like, oh my goodness, that's farthest thing from the truth ever. As I said, the cells are intelligent. They made us, and if we can't even honor that, then we have no understanding of this great communal intelligence. And I've seen that stuff about the elephants, and they know that the identity, if they're different bones, they know exactly which one was part of their family. And they pass that on for generations.
I was invited to the Star Trek Enterprise set this week, and I went and saw Scott Bakula and the rest of the crew, because this is its last season. It ends in a few months, as a matter of fact. And you talk again about synchronicity. I met the director of the episode, and I've always wanted to meet him, and I had a chance to. LeVar Burton.
LeVar, yes.
I open up your book, and there's a quote from him about you and your book. Now, that's a small world.
Yes, and he's a wonderful man, and we just got along very well when he understood this, because he's out there trying to bring harmony to this world as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, indeed. When you were writing the book and doing the research for it, was there anything that you were perplexed about that, I don't know, you had a difficult time trying to find a research, or did it just all flow into you?
Well, it's been a large number of years of putting this together. I started, as you mentioned earlier, I left the university in 1980 when I realized that I felt out of integrity teaching stuff that I knew really wasn't right just because it was in the textbook and I had to. And it was funny because I was the stuff that I had was so far afield that none of my scientific colleagues, they looked at me like I was crazy. And when I came back into the field at Stanford, they still thought I was crazy, but they looked at it and said, well, you got something here. And they gave me an opportunity to work on it. And it was wonderful because in time, all the missing pieces fell into place to make the story, which I saw in 1985, become the science that we now are talking about at Leading Edge Science today. So I was one of those guys, a lucky guy in the right place at the right time. Data just kept falling in, saying, my goodness, what you thought, look at here, here's data support everything. Even I told you that the cell membrane, I hypothesized that it was this organic computer chip, and 10 years later, a group actually took a cell membrane and created a digital readout from it. So demonstrating and verifying the technology of this information processor. So all the pieces fell in, so I'm a happy guy.
What would happen if the pharmaceutical industry took their billions of dollars of research and poured it into research into this field, the field of new biology?
Well, the first thing is the world would be a lot healthier place than you could ever imagine. I presume, or I don't know, maybe if your audience is aware that medical practice is responsible for the leading cause of death in the United States today. And it's and while the medical doctors get the burden of having to accept that that honor, the reality is they're the dupes, and mainly because the medical doctors can only practice as good as the education that they receive. And the issue is this: they're not getting an education that is proper, and it's biased and slanted because of the money from the big pharmaceutical industries, because they're trying to sell chemistry when we know you could heal with energy. So the issue is this: if they put all their money into this energy healing, they would not be the giant corporation anymore, because this is exactly why they're keeping us from going there, is energy healing is free.
Well, you know, and what's so amazing about this is that the people around the world are beginning to wake up to this.
Oh yeah. It's an evolution. We are on this evolutionary track. It was interesting. Five major books came out in a two-month period just a couple of months ago. Five books, two of them by editors, former editors of the New England Journal of Medicine, two of them by Harvard Medical School medical professors, and one of them by a pair of Pulitzer Prize writers, all within a two-month period, every one of them revealing that this whole system is just destructive and totally being manipulated by the pharmaceutical industry.
By the way, Chris from California writes, Amazon.com says the book won't ship until May 31st. I want it now.
Website.
Okay.
The website has an opportunity to get it right now, and I think Amazon should get it sooner than that, because they just went to the distributors this last week, and it should take a couple of weeks for them to get it.
This thing is fresh off the press.
It is fresh and hot, and as I said, I actually enjoyed it because it took 20 years to take it from science. I remember the first time I wrote a manuscript, and I gave it to some friends of mine. I said, could you read this and give me some feedback? I never saw them again. I think they read it, and they said they couldn't understand a word I was talking
it's
about.
It's got that new car smell to it, this new book. Isn't that cool?
And yet it's quite readable, and that's what the effort was. And as I said, it's even fun.
What were you trying to explain about the bread on a piece of butter, a butter sandwich?
A bread and butter sandwich is the model of a cell membrane and how it works. And that the butter part, it's sort of like the skin of a cell is like a giant bread and butter sandwich. And that the butter in the middle is a barrier that prevents fluid contents from the inside from crossing to the outside, or things from the outside crossing inside. That's why it's a skin. But then all of a sudden you say, well, if it's just a plain bread and butter sandwich, then you couldn't get nutrients in the cell, and you couldn't get waste matter out of the cell. So that's why you add those olives in the sandwich, and those are the proteins. And the proteins, some of the olives have like those little cocktail toothpicks with
pimentos,
the cellophane.
Little pimentos.
Those are the antennas, and they're reading the environmental signals like tuning forks. And another set of olives will respond when a receptor protein with an antenna is activated. It engages a second protein, which sends a signal inside the cell, which turns on functions or turns on genes. So the control of the cell wasn't manifesting itself from the inside. but it was manifesting it based on whatever signals were coming from the outside. So we're made in the image of those signals that come in.
You remind me of Mr. Wizard, Don Herbert. You do.
Well, I just be careful. Don't eat a big bread and butter sandwich like that because you'd have to drink some acetone to wash that baby down. There's a lot of butter in that sandwich.
Well, tell me, what does that do for your cholesterol count?
Oh, cholesterol, that's another phony thing you got to watch out for, too.
Do people actually still eat bread and butter sandwiches?
Geez, I have no idea. Considering the world economy, it may be just bread sandwiches at this point.
Have you ever eaten one?
Bread and butter? I love bread and butter.
I mean, in like not piled up the way you have in the book.
No, that would kill you.
Okay.
Yeah, no, bread and butter sandwich, great butter.
That's what
sandwich.
I thought. Well, yeah. High caloric.
Yeah, well, if that's a belief system as well. Okay.
Your cells would be saying, no, don't do that.
Well, they would say, give me the butter, then the margarine. That's for sure. That's what they're saying.
How do these cells communicate with each other?
Cells communicate by a variety of ways. There are physical direct connections, like neurons touching other cells. There are communications via chemicals, one chemical from one cell being sent to another cell. And now we also know that cells communicate by energy across fields. And that's sort of like an internet system. It's sort of what enables 50 trillion cells to be in community at the same time because they're all reading the same field and communicating with that field.
Yet, within the body, there is no central point of control.
Well, the brain is a central point of control because its function is the brain. It's interesting because I said that the brain of the cell was the skin of the cell. And those people out there that are familiar with embryology will also recognize that a human brain is actually derived from the skin as well. So that's the fractal imagery of it. And so that our skin in the embryo is tucked into the back of us like a little fold, and that becomes the brain, the spinal cord. Its function, because remember I said we talked about cells living free and as independent elements in a sense, and then coming together in a community. This all of a sudden says, they didn't come together as a bunch of cells. I said they came together as a community of cells. The difference between a bunch and a community is this. A bunch of cells are just squeezed in the same place. But a community is a functional design saying all the cells have agreed to follow like a common voice, like to follow a leader, so that even though every cell is intelligent unto itself, it will defer its intelligence to that central voice. Well, in a human body, the cells that comprise the nervous system, that part of the skin that becomes the brain, represents the distribution center of information that's picked up by the receptors all over the surface of the body reading the environment, and the brain just responds to these signals and then engages functions. But what happens at a higher level of organization, like in a human, the brain can, after experiencing things, can write a memory so that it's like software, and it says, so if you ever experience this thing again, you don't have to go through the whole learning process. You can immediately engage in the behavior. Well, why this becomes important is the cells have to respond to the central voice. That was the agreement of the community. When cells in your body leave that nature of a community and say, oh, the heck, I'm not paying attention to this, that's called cancer. Those are cells that say, well, this community isn't serving me, and I don't, you know, it seems to be falling apart, so everybody out here for themselves.
Yeah, or I'll take them all with me.
That's you know, we've experienced that as homelessness in the body or homelessness in our cities is the same thing.
Hey, real fast, by the way, when you were talking about cholesterol as a myth.
Yes.
Why?
Because part of the research that I got involved with was on these endothelial cells, the blood vessel cells, and it turns out that the cholesterol shows up after the damage has already occurred. The cholesterol is not the insult. It's almost like a stain in the sense that it appears where damage occurs, but it itself didn't cause the damage. And I worked with a dear friend, Dr. Theodore Hollis, a professor at Penn State, where I worked in his lab cloning, again, these human cells and seeing how they responded to the cholesterol, and it turned out that it wasn't the cholesterol that was the problem, it was the stress that was the problem.
Stay with us, Bruce. Phone calls next. Your turn with Dr. Bruce Lipton on Coast to Coast AM.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.
Like tears from a storm, like tears from a storm.
with George Norrie, call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And your phone calls with our guest, Dr. Bruce Lipton. We'll be back with him in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie with our special guest tonight, Dr. Bruce Lipton, and your phone calls tonight as they begin to roll in, Bruce. Do you travel much, speak?
A lot. Two, three, four times a month out every weekend.
That's a lot.
Yeah, but it's really great because it's just fun to see people understand really a little bit more who they really are and how much power they have in controlling the unfoldment of their lives.
Do you believe in faith healers?
Yes.
You do?
Yes. This is part of the energy, this field of identity that runs through us, and it's an information field, sort of like I'm sure people in your audience are familiar with Rupert Sheldrake's morphogenic fields. It's pretty much the same kind of thing, that we can influence each other, not in our physical bodies, but in our energy forms.
Let's go to the phones. Ready?
Yeah.
Let's pick it up by going east of the Rockies. First of all, you're on with Dr. Bruce Lipton. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, where are you calling from?
Roswell, Georgia. This is Kathy.
Had you said Roswell, New Mexico,
you say that every
we
time.
We would have put you on our shoulders and carried you around.
Well, I wanted to ask the doctor a couple of things. He talked about healing ourselves and healing the planet, and if he could give us any advice that we could maybe start now working with on healing ourselves, and also get his opinion on GMOs, genetically modified foods, and those were a couple of questions.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay,
chat,
well, thanks, Kathy. Let me start with the GMOs because that's a nice quicker one. Okay.
Okay.
The GMOs, very interesting. As what we found out in the new research in biology is that genes are not contained with any one species, that this whole new understanding is manifesting that organisms are continuously exchanging DNA with each other. So when we put out a genetically modified organism into an environment, we're actually seeding that modification throughout the field. In fact, it's reversed a couple of potential goals that they were looking for, in that some of the weeds have picked up the modified genes are now stronger than the crops that they were trying to protect in the first place. So that's reversed. And here's one that's mentioned in the book, because this is, again, an important topic, is that it is now recognized, we have bacteria in our gut, mm-hmm, that are essential for our digestion. It is now recognized that these bacteria have picked up genes from genetically modified foods. And so we're changing our own interior flora and fauna through these genetic products.
So, is that good?
It's not a good idea. I think that I relate to it in the book. It's sort of like Sorcerer's Apprentice, where Mickey Mouse was trying to learn the magic and had a little bit of knowledge and got all those brooms that carry buckets of water to fill up a big cistern, and then it got out of control. I think genetic engineers at this point, because they really don't have an understanding how cells work, they're not using the leading edge information, relying on old stuff, are much like Mickey Mouse playing with our genes, and I surely don't want them to do this, and yet it's money that drives it and not science.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I think, is a problem that's awaiting us that has grave potential consequences unless we get some more awareness into the field. Now, the awareness part, that also relates now to your first question. What do we do? And as I said, we're not genetically determined, that we're actually, that the physiology of the cell is controlled by our perceptions of the world. And then I said, but there are two minds that are operating here, the conscious one, which is really like the spirit involving with our experiences, a spirit like putting the hands on the wheel and using our life experiences to learn how to drive the car. So there's some sense of when we're really dealing in consciousness, we're driving the vehicle ourselves. Yet 85% of our functions and activities are essentially carried out by the subconscious mind. And the significance about that is we don't observe that when it's happening. And that subconscious mind is not even programmed by us. It's actually programmed by the people who taught us our early life experiences from before birth through the first 6 years. The conflicts that arise in our lives are, our consciousness may be looking for health, happiness, love, prosperity. But our subconscious, which is programmed by somebody else and operating our system most of the time, might have been programmed with the kinds of things you hear parents yelling at kids in a supermarket, like, you stupid kid, or you don't deserve things. Well, what the book goes into, a very important emphasis, and you can also download an article about this, a free article on the web about conscious parenting, is that when we talk to a child less than 6 years of age, the brain is designed, the child's brain is not functioning in the EEG range of active consciousness. It's actually in lower activity, which is called the hypnagogic state. Mm-hmm. And the reason why this is important is the child has to learn all the rules to fit into society, doesn't have enough conscious experience to contribute to those rules. And so the brain EEG activity doesn't even express consciousness as a predominant form until after six. Which means the first 6 years of a child's life, they're essentially in a hypnotic trance. And when a child is told, like, by a harried parent, like, you are stupid, or you don't deserve something, you see that at the store when a kid wants something and they start screaming and the parent says, you don't deserve it. We have to recognize a child at that level doesn't have the consciousness to figure out that the mother is saying that because she's in a hurry and things are late and all this kind of stuff. The child's just downloading, I don't deserve things. Well, when now you're 20, 30, 40 years of age, 85% of your behavior, when you're not looking at it, is conforming to the belief that you don't deserve things if that's what you were told. And as a result, then you will sabotage yourself without even seeing it. And I need to just add this point so people get it. It's really important. Especially those that drive a car know this. When you first learned how to drive a car, it was conscious. You had to use a lot of consciousness to engage everything to make the car go.
Too much consciousness, Bruce.
But now that you know how to drive a car when you're older, you don't even think about it. You could actually, and think about this, most of us that drive, you can either get caught up in a conversation with a passenger or be dreaming about something or, you know, planning things in your head, that all of a sudden you look out the window and you realize you haven't actually paid attention to the road for the last 10 minutes. And the point that I'm trying to bring up, the educational point in that is, when you didn't observe yourself driving the car, who was driving the car? And the answer was your subconscious, because your conscious was engaged in conversation or planning stuff. But the more important question is this. Did you see how you drove the car during that time period? And the answer is no, because your consciousness was engaged. Well, that's the catchy point of the subconscious. When it works, we don't observe it, because its design is to work when we're not paying attention, to do it automatically. So the point is, if much of our programming from that 0 to 6 is putting limitations in our lives because parents say, oh, you're not good at math, or you're not smart enough, or you can't play music, when they make these pronouncements and we get that, that's in our subconscious, now we're older and we're trying to become successful, and yet 85% of our behavior, and it's behavior we don't even observe, is coming from these tapes. And why that's important is if you can catch the tapes, if you can catch the thoughts that go through your head while you're parked at the stoplight, and you hear them, psychologists tell us 70% or more of those thoughts are negative and redundant. And the significance is the more negative and the more times you repeat them, the more, when you're not paying attention, that is the behavior you're expressing, meaning we're not being limited by the environment and the universe. The universe will give you anything. The fight that we have is between the conscious mind, which has a desire to become successful, and a subconscious mind that was programmed by other people.
Thanks for your call, Kathy. How do you explain, then, Bruce, evil? Cells gone bad?
No, programs that are gone bad. I mean, that's why the issue, it's like evil, especially, we look at everything genetic, so they're trying to find out where's the gene for criminality and the gene for all these things, or, what makes a psychopath killer, what gene? And
yeah, I mean, Hitler didn't start off bad as a little boy, I don't think.
I think that there were lots of reports of problems, of family problems when he was growing up.
Family problems.
Profound. Yes. And remember, I said, when you're a youngster, you're just downloading the beliefs. That's why kids grow up to be almost like their parents, and a lot of people, when they're told, oh, you're just like your mom or your dad, and they take almost like an offense, like, what do you mean? Because they can't even see that automatic behavior when it plays, that it's playing a tape of their parents. So we have to really look into what happened in our development before we gained consciousness.
Well, yeah, but I've seen some parents at the trials of their serial killer son, for
yes.
example,
yes.
shaking their head, going, "I don't know what happened. What do you run? Are they liars? Are they in denial?"
No, they're seeing life through the way they perceive life, and it's things that happen in front of our noses. Sometimes we don't see them, and there are many stories about this, like the one that was even recently in What the Bleep, the movie, which it happened apparently to both Columbus and Magellan. When their tall ships came into the harbors in the New World, and they took the small boats out and landed on the shore and met the natives, and they said, "Where'd you come from?" And they said, "That those ships out there in the harbor," and the natives looked out in the harbor and didn't see the ships. And the reason is, it was not in their reality. And I think this is the issue again about UFOs. People may see them quite frequently, but it's not in their reality, and therefore it's like totally dismissed. It's not even there. So those natives couldn't see the ship, but when they took the shaman out and a couple of them on the small boat, put them on the big boat, and they touched that boat and felt it and it became real, then after that all the people could see the boats. So the issue is that parents see what they're going to look and what they're looking at and miss everything else.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi.
Good evening.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I'm George, Dr. Bruce.
Hi, George.
This is definitely a top 10 show.
Well, appreciate it. It's great stuff, great information.
Well, that's because of you, Bruce.
Oh, no, that's because the universe provided it.
If I could just say, Bruce, I came up with a saying that I'm very proud of. It's what we do is practice for what we're going to do. I wanted to suggest this, George, if I may.
Yes, please.
This field that coalesces cells into more complex structures, could this be the energy causing the crop patterns, some of which have been described as fractal geometry, and maybe we could be just talking to ourselves?
Now, you know crop circles, Bruce, don't you?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Is there any correlation here?
These are the wild cards, and the problem that I think we're finding is, there probably could be very much correlated information, but we deal in a world which is where they divide things, as you were well aware, into what they call the scientific group and the questionable group. And they'll put all their money into the scientific group, and when it comes to the questionable group, they just ignore it and pay no heedance to it or tell people they're crazy. And yet, when there's a change in our leadership, things that were formerly put off as not being real start to get new attention because that's what the population wants. I think that we are in this stage right now where conventional science is actually, as I said, is put us against the wall. It's not, health isn't any better with all the stuff we know. That people are moving away from that. And as mentioned in the book as well, I think we're moving into this bigger domain of consciousness, spirit, community, wholeness. And I think then all those little pieces of a picture that look separate right now, such as the crop circles, etc., may all come to play in a one giant picture, except our tax dollars, our science money is investing in the pharmaceutical vision of life.
Well, you and Leonard Horowitz would become the best of friends. You know that?
Well, I'm not sure of Horowitz's information, but it sounds like he's talking the same thing, right?
Yeah, he is. Pretty close. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's move on to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello. This is Mike from Topanga, California.
Hi, Mike. Not too far from us. Go ahead.
To be on the show. built many a radio-controlled helicopter while listening late at night.
Yeah, and it'd be, by the way, Feb 21 on KFI will be on starting live at 10 o'clock.
Well, it's about time. They really made a terrible mistake in the past by not continuing the same programming times, I believe. What I wanted to call about was what you began to speak about at the beginning of this segment was the relationship to Rupert Sheldrake's morphogenetic field theory.
Yes.
And as I thought about it more, I realized how much of a threat this is to the status quo. And I read that a book reviewer in Nature magazine suggested that Sheldrake's books be burned.
And that means he's touching on some sensitive areas. Otherwise, they ignore him completely.
Yes. So I think this is coming into kind of a scientifically sanctioned positive mental attitude, whereas our tendency of thinking has that effect on us of whether we want to heal or whether we want to experience illness or what have you. It really just seems that it's time that science does take a closer look at this and actually start to come up with more and more theories and practices to apply it for people.
Well, this is exactly what I was talking about. It's people's attitudes change. The money follows the people. And that's why the medical industry is a little concerned, because of alternative practices have taken about half their business. And so at first they said, those are all quacks and don't pay attention to them. But, of course, a lot of people got well, and a lot of people get better through this. So now they've changed tack, and now they're sort of like saying, well, we're trying to bring these into our hospital. And again, why? Because if the money was going out there, even though they thought it was all quack stuff, now that so much money is out there, now they're going to take a look at it as being more serious, because they're going to follow the money on it.
Absolutely. Bruce, as more and more scientists begin to become, I think, on board, and that is happening, isn't it?
It's fun, because for years I started public lectures on this about 1985, and for years I never saw a medical person come into my audience. And in the last about 2 or 3 years, there have been increasing number of doctors showing up, because they find the frustration they're hitting themselves is forcing them to think outside of the box, because as long as they stay in the box, they're not only limited, but they're actually, it's a lethal situation in regard to treating patients. So there's a change coming. And another interesting thing is that in science, they say they measure progress by tombstones. And in that regard, it's interesting, within this last number of months, three of the of major figures that gave us the genetic determinism story have died, including Francis Crick, a guy, McCarty, who was in 1945, with two others, found out for sure that DNA was the genetic material, and then just the other day, the evolutionist, Ernst Mayr, who really brought together molecular biology and Darwin to make what's called neoevolution. All three of these guys just died. What that means is, boy, we're really ready now to go past the limitations that we've held in regard to our belief concerning genes.
Stay with us. We're going to be back with more phone calls for our very special guest tonight, Dr. Bruce Lipton. If you ever need to contact me, just email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. Dr. Lipton's website, which, as he said, you can get his book much quicker this way, Bruce Lipton, LAPTON, BruceLipton.com. By the way, for those of you who like breaking stories, here's another one for you. Prince Charles plans to marry Camilla Parker Bowles. There you go. Back in a moment.
Want to time travel? Go back to past shows on Streamlink. Sign up online at coasttocoastam.com.
wrapped around each other, trying so hard to stay warm. That first cold winter together, lying in each other's arms, watching those old leaves falling in love so desperately. Honey, I was your hero, and you were my leading lady. We had it all, just like Bobby and Bacall, starring in our own late-late show, sailing away to Key Largo.
To talk with George Norrie, call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. You gave me
your... I love that song, don't you? Our guest tomorrow on Coast to Coast, Jay-Z Knight. She will share her story and experiences connected with the channeling of a 35-year-old warrior from the lost continent of Atlantis. A scientific test shows that she's telling the truth. So we're going to talk with her about that. I can't wait for that. This is a first for me, too. After Dark, it's a CD. You get two of them. They're different, of course. 2.5 hours of great bumper music, calls to the show, and ghost stories. Couple ways to order it. AfterDarkCD.com. That's their website, AfterDarkCD.com. Or call this toll-free number. Operators are there, or you'll go straight to voicemail and get taken care of as soon as possible. 1-800-598 2331. That's 1-800-598-2331. And let's go right to the phones, Bruce. Dr. Bruce Lipton, our guest, and right at the end, he'll tell you about that special downloadable offer he's got. West of the Rockies, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Good morning, Dr. Bruce. Good morning,
Good
George.
Morning.
Hi.
There's always these, you guys get so close, the scientists get so close, everybody gets so close to these answers that everybody wants to know. But there's no way that you're ever going to get those answers in the human form. You'll have to be in your spirit form or your soul form in order to get those answers, because those answers could be turned around and used on us in a negative energy way. And the only way that that could keep clean and to keep pure as it is not to let someone in that could damage it. So the only way that you're ever going to get the answers that we're looking for is everybody has to take time out to take care of one another and think of somebody else before yourself. And we'll have all the answers you've ever wanted, because there will be no more questions.
What do you think of that, Bruce?
Well, that was just the kind of thing I was talking about. What you said is the nature of community. And that's what evolution was all about. And that's the failing point that we experience in our world today, especially here in the States, is the loss of community, which really was characteristic of the States, 50 years ago, where you could feel that you knew people and you could feel safe in a community. And now that's even broken down, that we don't even have community within family anymore. That's a de-evolution in a sense. And you're right that we really have to come back together to respect one another, know who we are in the process, and also recognize that the other people are just extensions of who we are as well.
Next up. Oh, go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, I just want to say that was I agree with you. We have to become conscious. And that's using our spiritual drive and not just depending on the mechanism.
East of the Rockies, you're up with Bruce Lipton. Hi there.
Hi, this is Jessica from New York, and I love your show.
Thanks, Jessica.
And I have four things that I'd like to raise that I'd like the doctor to comment on. One is this issue of complexification. Things seem to get more and more complex as time passes. The second issue is this raises the concept of the arrow of time, which also then goes to the concept of progress. Then this ties into the Teilhard de Chardin thing of complexification and nuogenesis, and you have people evolving and supposedly getting more conscious, but what is this force that pushes it? It's almost as though there's some, it's not even a creator force, but it's some sort of force that seems to push us toward a more complex and conscious thing. And you know, all the things that you've been talking about and the callers have been talking about, kind of, what is there some thing that you can discuss in the work you've been doing that, whether it's dark matter or Sheldrake's field, what do you think this is and what do you think all those different issues relate to it as?
Well, that's a lot of questions, and my expertise being more at the cellular level, I see your issue about complexity, but complexity at one level is not necessarily complexity, but more awareness. And complexity makes it sound like things get harder to understand, and yet life is so fundamentally simple, and that's been our big problem because we do look at it as being complex, and nature operates off of the most fundamental simplistic rules. And when it comes to direction and push, that's where I think the mathematicians that are involved with fractal geometry will be able to translate for us what's going on, because we live in a chaos zone, and that chaos zone is like an event horizon. It's the surface of the Earth and the interface with the energy, especially from the sun. And life is formed right at that interface where the energy
right.
of the sun meets the Earth. That is a chaotic pattern that you can mathematically figure with fractals. And when you start to see what fractals are, they're a continuous iterated equation repeated over and over again. It drives itself. There's no end to it. It's infinity. It just goes on and on. So if you look at the patterns that we're in, and again, this is what George and I were talking about earlier about, they're like fields out there that shape this matter.
Right.
That we are becoming material in a swirling eddy of this chaos at the surface of our planet, and we're being driven by a geometry, which is that's where, if we're going to get answers from, is between those mathematicians and the physicists that see how the shaping of that field leads to the shaping of who we are. Yet the one thing, as you mentioned, it gets more complexity, larger and larger communities. Communities, more and more awareness, the cell having a unit of awareness, 50 trillion cells in your body having the next higher level of awareness, which is that human level, then 50 trillion cells in my body and how many other millions and millions of other people then form that next level. And yet every level is basically a simple repetitive pattern of the same thing. And yet we're being driven to recognize that we live in an entire ecosystem, that we were not just deposited here and can terrorize it, because when we understand the flow of the system, we will advance our own evolution. And what is that? The only thing that we can find uniform about evolution is that over time it leads to increased awareness. And so there's a built-in, it's almost like Star Trek, you know, one of the Veger.
Right.
We're out there accumulating all this awareness to feed back on itself. And so there's a plan of continuing awareness whatever way we get there. And the next way, and we're on the verge of coming out of a chaos right now to another form, that civilization is actually in a fractal image repeating an evolution that's already happened, that the evolution of animals and the evolution of human civilization as an animal have important parallels. And today, we're right at a transition point between a reptilian civilization and a mammalian civilization. And
what do you mean by that exactly? Reptilian versus mammalian.
Okay, that the character of a reptile is conscious but not self-conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And the character of a mammal is consciousness, self-consciousness, which leads to nurturing. Reptiles just do what they need to do at the moment, at the time, with no consideration about where and why and what they're doing. Mammals do everything with a vision of what that will do in the future. And so we are under a leadership right now which is more or less just doing what things to be next that has to be done without looking down the road to see where we're going. Mammals are nurturers. These are the people that were really started to coalesce in 1969 when the evolution of our bird phase, which goes reptiles, birds, mammals, bird phase, it started with Wilbur and Orville Wright, took us to the moon. And that evolution led us to the moon, and when they shot that picture of the Earth from the moon, it put into our human consciousness a perception of, oh my God, that's all there is, we have to take care of it. And that started getting people involved with the environment and their own health and the communities to bring this about. That's not the corporate environment, unfortunately. That's, the corporate stuff is still reptilian. But the mammalian people are nurturers that want to take care of our planet. And we're in a struggle right now between the reptiles, the corporate end that just wants to use the planet and get what it can, and the new thinkers that are saying, if we don't take care of it, we won't be here. And I think we're in this evolution that looks real scary at this moment is the evolution in the fractal imagery of leaving behind an older reptilian way of life, which is survival of the fittest, it's the dinosaur killer machine, and coming into a communal, nature, nurture-oriented, mammalian, peaceful civilization. And the dinosaurs, if we go back in history, never just really turned over the control of the mammals. The dinosaurs essentially had to crash. And I think we're really on the cusp of this crash, but it will bring together a new mammalian view of taking care of ourselves and our future and our kids.
Very good. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for your phone call, too. We've got lots of calls, not a lot of time, so let's go to as many as we can. Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm just curious how, when you were talking earlier about kind of like comparing the magnets and the shards of metal or whatever to form the bodies, and how does, like, karma in your philosophy kind of fit into this? Like, I don't know if that makes any sense.
No. Yes, it does, because, as I said, we were receiving information from the outside from a source, that spiritual identity. But it's a two-way street, because the spiritual identity gains information from having lived in the body. So that we're sort of like Mars landers. We send them from Earth. They land on Mars. They're being controlled by a guy at NASA who sends information to move the vehicle around. But through moving the vehicle around and experiencing the terrain of Mars by the feedback that comes from the lander back to NASA, the driver learns how to drive the vehicle. So having a body is not just the end of a line. Having a body is something that resonates with the spirit. So when you come in and you live your life and the energy that the fields that you generate from your life are harmonically resonant to your spiritual field, that's why you're connected, so that your life experiences can change that field. And when we come back in again, which is easy to understand if you recognize if we're those receptors on the surface of the cell, I could take your receptors off your cell and put it on an embryo, and when that embryo grows up, it'll be downloading your signal. The point is, if we come back in again, then we come back in with a slightly different energy than we came in the first time, because it changes through our experiences.
So in a sense, would you say that, in the kind of comparison, that your karma, that good or bad, so let's say it's bad, people that have bad karma, that, you know, you kind of see it in their face, you kind of see it in a sense, the way they look, and this is kind of maybe changing them in a way?
Oh, it's changing them, but here's the thing, you know, karma lasts as long as you're unaware, but as you become aware, you can change everything. That's what the nature of the game was, more or less. We come into these physical bodies like a video game. There's somebody out there with a screen watching us moving around, and we're the character. And we're moving around, and they're playing us, and they're learning from the game, and they're going back and forth. And so that whatever is really, you know, moving us is learned from these experiences. And when you learn, the moment you learn, you can learn to run the machine and be successful all the time. And the issue is, so how long is karma? And the answer is, until you become aware of who you are and how you're running the machine, then you have the free will to control it.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're up with Dr. Bruce Lipton. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Alan in St. Helens, Oregon.
Hello, Alan.
On KEX. First, just thank you. It's a real joy to listen to Bruce again. And Bruce, you,
yes.
I'm sure you don't remember me, but we met in Eugene about 14, 15 years ago through Linda and Stan.
Oh, my goodness. That was a long time ago, wasn't it? That was a Seth group.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and I guess...
Seth had this understanding that I... It was funny, I got pulled into that because when I started lecturing about the new science, people that understood Seth said, my goodness, this is what that came down in the Seth literature. And in fact, Seth did talk about that the brain of the cell was the membrane, and that we respond to these environments through that. It was just a little aside. I'm sorry I interrupted. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, when you started talking about sharing, you know, the information that that has progressed, it just like you know, light bulbs went off. It was a lot of fun, and it's really fun listening to you. You have, as a scientist and a, you know, a grown up, you've got a sense of joy about you that I haven't experienced, particularly with listening to other scientists outside of people like Amit Goswami. And I'm wondering if that is something that you've always felt. It's almost like
No. Well, yeah, Alan, I'll tell you, that was it. When that transformative moment came, I mean, you know, the first thing it did was, for me as a scientist, when I looked at the results of that the membrane was controlled from the environment, to me it was like 2 + 2 = 4. I realized the first thing, I said, oh, my God, I'm immortal because I'm not in it. And so that if it goes down, I'm still out there. So... You know what that did was, the first thing that did was to own that, not as a devotional belief, like, is there this other thing? It's sort of like, yeah, it is. That's just the way it is. Fear seemed to disappear a lot. But, you know, the greatest fear you have is losing your life. And at some point, if you could really own that your life goes on and on and on, it's just like a film strip with frames, one after the other, there's a certain amount of freedom of like, oh, my God, everybody is oppressed in the fear of their mortal existence ending and as I was before. Having gone on this other side, letting go of the fear also gave me the option of letting go of the patterns that really control us as we've acquired them through education. It gave me a freedom to step outside the box, and the joy is I realized that my life, that if it wasn't working right, it was my responsibility, and by owning that and rewriting those beliefs that were limiting me, I'm walking. I mean, honestly, if there's a heaven, I so honestly and truly feel that it's here, and this is a new feeling only from owning the consciousness of we are not automatons controlled by genes.
Okay, let's go to another caller. Maybe our last wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Bruce, my name is Eva Herr, and I had the same thing happen as you. You're kind of freaking me out. I feel like that I'm on the radio talking. I do high-profile divorce work for a living, and I went to bed one night doing that and woke up the next morning just like you.
Yeah.
So now I detect single-cell vibrational frequencies, and I'm of the opinion that when electrons oscillate, it transmits and receives at the same time, so that's what brings in negative energy, which changes the vibration in a particular organ where those emotions store, and I want to know what you think about that. And I want to know what you think about my opinion about the God force being hydrogen energy.
And you have about a minute for us, Bruce. Go ahead.
Oh, I don't know where to start, except the fact is this. That what we allow in, and this is what is an important point, what we allow in is what we have been programmed to allow in. Negative energy, that old saying of surround yourself with white light, is actually a real understanding as much as walking across hot coals when your mind is right will work, and when your mind is not right, you'll be receptive to the heat and it'll burn yourself. You can walk through this world almost unscathed by keeping your thoughts in harmony and in balance, and as the earlier call, I think Mike said, it was about our community. You can walk on this planet in such a peaceful, harmonic way that life gives you things. It just comes out of the sky.
All right, Bruce, I want to thank you very quickly. Tell us about the book and the offer again.
Yeah, well, the book is The Biology of Belief, and it's, as I said, it's easy to read and even fun. You'll even laugh. And that's different for science. In addition to that, there's an offer on the website. And I think if you write offer@brucelipton.com,
you get information to get that special chapter from Healing Our Planet, Healing Ourselves. And I think it would bring a lot of hope when you read it, because you can see we can collectively create what we were destined to provide, a garden on this planet.
Good job tonight, Bruce. Let's have you back again, okay?
I'd appreciate the opportunity, George. Thank you so much.
Take care, my friend. Hey, for Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, and Art Bell, I'm George Norris, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on the next edition. Until then, my friends, be safe.